Thank you for coming, for attending this Dharma Talk. Thank you for all of your help in supporting this community, both by attending, by practicing, and by financially supporting us. We need your help. Please continue if you can.
This evening's Dharma Talk. In this evening's Dharma Talk, I want to talk a little bit about where thoughts arise, as if there were a location. But anytime we're talking about awareness, there can be locations that arise conditionally. And the idea here with that kind of a title is to encourage you to, as you practice Shikantaza, to see if you can find a location. I don't know how that will show up for you. Maybe not at all, but it is always about the intention to see that, not the accomplishment, as you've heard me say a number of times. I'll say it again. It's about the intention. So please do that. Please look there. Practicing Shikantaza is, of course, an awareness practice where you're, the way I teach it, watching what moves, watching the thoughts arise, turn this way, turn that way. Maybe we're adding a little bit of commentary or elaboration on the thought. Maybe not. Maybe it's just the raw quality of thoughts arising and disappearing and arising and disappearing without much comment, without much analysis, judgment, or even understanding in the conventional sense. So observe that. Observe that. And as you do, you may be able to see when thoughts arise, you may be able to see the intersection or the point where you add something onto it. The thoughts come up are dependently arisen, way of talking about it. And then what we add on is our pushing away or our fluffing up or our ignoring or distraction away from whatever that may be, usually dependent upon the content. So that's what I'm encouraging you to do when you sit, is to keep it very simple, keep it very minimal, and just observe, holding everything very still that you can. You might just flash on various other things that are moving. Just don't maintain anything. There's other kinds of meditation practice where you try to maintain awareness of the breath, or you if thoughts arise, you boycott, to use Kumbh Rinpoche's expression, you boycott those and you return to the simple reception of the breath. And I'm saying, not better, just different. I'm saying, just watch what moves. And as it moves, see if you can see the way you add a movement to it. You make a comment, or you interpret, or you leave what arises. You leave the awareness of what arises or some thought about it. You actually create that, you could say. Whether you're actually creating something or not, I don't know. I think it's about awareness, not about necessarily knowing what arises in the awareness. The awareness is what is important. You're going to liberate yourself. You might want to start with liberating yourself from your emotions, your thought patterns, your memories, and all the other razzmatazz that goes on in anyone's mind about everything. Or constantly, because there's a body here, because there's eyesight, hopefully, there's ear sight, hopefully, there's all the other sights for all the other sense fields. Receive, receive, receive. And you sit down and hold still. Keep it very simple. Just receive. And in this way, a kind of understanding is possible, that it is possible for a kind of understanding to arise that is not based on thinking, not based on evaluation of judgment or analysis, that actually goes beyond that. Traditionally, this has been referred to as beyond the known. Freedom from the known is another expression. You're free from what you know. That doesn't mean you stop knowing things, but you're free from the tyranny of what you know that is encouraged or fueled by fear. Fear of the unknown. We want to fill it up with what we know. Well, at least I know. At least I. Anytime you say at least, look closely at what that's referring to in terms of your self-centeredness. So this probably won't come up as some kind of a success story. I did what was said, and now I can really see that clearly. There may not be the contraction known as knowledge, but there may be a continued openness that is just receiving, receiving, receiving. If you need to act, or if you need to move out into what you're receiving and act on that, push that away, fluff that up, distract yourself from it, you won't be able to help that. But you may have the illusion that you have a say-so there, you have some control. This is circularity. Yes. You have the illusion that you're getting somewhere. Spiritual materialism. Talked about way before we got here by Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche and other teachers. Talk about using spiritual techniques to get somewhere, accomplish something, know more, have more wisdom, more, 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 know what we want, less, less, less of what we don't want. Spiritual materialism. Could be psychological materialism, materialism, that's all over the place. Takes a lot of returning to the path, returning to the three jewels. You use some kind of a structure like that so that you have some kind of a touchstone that's not based on a gaining idea of ego, the gaining idea of the self-centeredness, the narcissism of that part of the consciousness referred to in the Yogacara tradition as the klesha mind or the seventh consciousness, where all of this self-centeredness and the paranoia shows up there. Consciousness is very, very, to say complicated is an understatement. It's just, it can do anything. It's everywhere. It's not separate from anything. That doesn't mean that rocks think. But rocks are not separate from consciousness. They're just smarter than that. So the idea in your sitting practice is to hold very still, sit symmetrical. You've heard this said over and over again. Probably can't hear it too many times. Your only job there, the only thing you need to do is to hold still, but not don't be too hard on yourself in that way. Some of that awareness of movement might be when you get up off the cushion to go to the restroom or get some water, or just maybe you've been sitting for a while and you've kind of had it. And that's okay. You're not necessarily taking a break. You might need to go and look out the window. You should trust your body, mind complex, the whole thing, not just the thoughts about the body or the body's various excursions into the mind stream, parading around with some kind of thought patterns. Those areas are very, very sensitive and are full of misunderstanding that is driven by fear. And if when you're successful at living in that way, covering things up, you really don't know you're afraid because it works, because it is dependently arisen and because you're using the consciousness to control yourself, control others, maybe control whole governments. It worked for a while. In other words, you're able to cover up and not know that you're afraid because you're downloading or putting your discomfort off on others, controlling them, confusing them, and so on, blaming them. Interesting area. And you, if you're listening to me, you're already a meditator, more than likely, and you can actually strengthen this. I don't know if it's an actual muscle so much as it's just return to this very simple situation of just being present, just receive through all the sense fields, including the mind. It takes quite a while. And it varies for different people, depending on the karma that you bring into this human realm, that what comes in here with you. You are free and well favored, and you're free, as you've heard me say many times, free to come to such a meeting as this. There aren't many of them, probably very few. And you're well favored in that you are open-minded enough. You can actually hear what is being said or pointed at that you're not necessarily just locked down in your own beliefs and opinions, so full of fear that you can't even consider something else. And of course, or maybe not of course, but probably, you're going to have a lot of fear. But it doesn't matter, you can do it. Whatever shows up, it's there, has to be there, dependently arisen. It may come, it may go, it may fade away. You may spend the rest of your life with some kind of fear showing up. I certainly do. What's different? Here you go again, the same old message I give you over and over and over again. Nobody's here anymore. There's no identity. There's just dependent origination. And this is an illusion that you do not have to get rid of. You don't have to get rid of your ego. You don't have to get rid of anything. You don't have to do anything. But you could not miss your life. You could receive what comes up in your mind stream. It has a, not like it has permission, because it's not separate enough to have some kind of permission come that way. It's more like it's just there. It's happening. It's occurring right now. It's a feeling. It's a memory. Just receive, 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 receive. And when you produce out of a deep understanding what you're receiving, a lot of it is going to be the suffering of the world. Maybe right in your next door neighbor. Just receive. Short talk, lots of questions. Yes, Harrison.
Harrison Bowing, how do you know how to trust yourself? You know, you talked a little bit about, you know, trust your body if you need to get up or something, but if we're not at the point where sort of we're awake enough to trust our thoughts, how do we find that trust?
Yes, very good. Just do it with the body. The mind, you can't really arm wrestle with the mind, but you can with the body. And the body mind are not two different things. It just looks that way. And nor are they the same thing. I'm not going to go that far. Do it with the body. Get to the Christian. Get to studying the Dharma. Study the Dharma with Sangha. Not just reading your own interpretation of or reading somebody else's interpretation of what Dogen said. Not that you can't do that. We do some of that. What somebody else said about what Dogen said, or what somebody else said about Dogen and what Dogen said, just goes on and on. I'm fine with that, but you might want to interact with your fellow students, other Sangha members about what was happening with that. So it's that kind of a trust. It's the kind of trust that's not trusting about something. It's just basic trust. You're just going to do this. You might do it because I said so. If I'm your teacher and I say, practice, train your mind. Study the Dharma. You don't have to understand the Dharma, but what you have to do, you have to study it. The not knowing something is how it's studied. You're not, because if you already know it, if you already understand everything you read, you might as well be studying a sociology or history or something that has really strong structures in it that are, people might debate them, but basically they're just closer to a relative kind of truth, which is fine. But this is the ultimate approach. It's an ultimate path. And so to go back to your question, I would say it's not so much of trusting in something so you don't have to examine it anymore, don't have to look at it. It's the kind of trust that you can look into the darkness. You can look into, to use that image, of you can look into not knowing. And what? The Tibetan word for this is gom. Gom means get used to it. It's not going to be a success story. That's the relative world. You want that? Go study law. Take a lot of aspirin. Or go study something like that. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. We all need to do something like that, probably. But if you're working on this situation, then train your mind to see clearly. And a lot of what you see will not be comfortable. We've been building this crazy world up for a long time. The kind of trust is more like maybe faith works better. You've understood, you've listened to the Dharma, you've listened to the person that is your teacher, and you've listened to his or her or their students interact, and you see the Sangha, the way it functions. It's not some kind of purified thing where everybody's running around in, as deities or something, but going in and actually working with the raw material of the mind together. I often say, just do it anyway. And why I say that is because I know how much resistance there is in this. You just have to do it anyway, because it may not feel like the conventional idea of success. Let's do it anyway. Continue, return, over and over again. There's all kinds of structures that will explain to you and will probably somewhat satisfy your intellectual curiosity about what this whole world is, this whole world of duality that it has been taught, that this is unreal. It's a delusion that you're deluded by, the delusion that you think you're a solid, separate being. This is a big one. And so there'll be some, as you go along, there'll be some inkling that this is unreal. But then as soon as you start to grasp at the unreality as some kind of knowledge, you start to concretize and bring it into the relative realm so you can know stuff, then it disappears, it vanishes, it erodes, it collapses, it becomes transparent, on and on and on. So it's the idea of, as long as there's an otherness to it that you're grasping, that's not the kind of faith or trust we're talking about. Trust the space in which things occur. That's harder, because usually it's very dark and it can be scary, especially to one who thinks they're a physical body-mind complex. If you think you are that, then there's going to be quite a bit of scary stuff happening, or what, depressing maybe, or a feeling of failure. I can't get this. I'm never going to understand this kind of thing. I know I've certainly been through a fair amount of that stuff, but not easy. And I would say, just do it anyway. Continue, return. Don't maintain. Let it all fall apart. Return, then the next day, return again. I vow to be with all things. I receive, or I go to, or I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, the teacher. You can do any number of things, but have some kind of form where you come back to the teacher, maybe just to an image of the Buddha, or maybe just to an altar of some kind, maybe of your own making. Maybe you need to invent this yourself. I couldn't do that, but perhaps you can. If you can't, then do it in a traditional way. An image of the Buddha, an image of the teacher, offer incense. There's something called sevenfold Mahayana Puja. If you need all of those various things that you can do, offering flowers, offering food, offering water, offering incense, offering a candle, offering prostration, you can read about them. It's all over the place. Those are just ways of catching you at different ways the consciousness shows up, so that you can use your body, use your speech, use your gesture. So you keep coming back to this over and over again. Why? Because you've heard something. Perhaps you've heard the Four Noble Truths. Life is suffering. Want to argue with that? The cause is wanting something else. The goal is cessation. And the path is training your mind to see clearly. Shila, Samadhi, and Prajna. Simply put, use those. If those are inspiring to you, then use that. Continue to return to the teacher, the teaching, the community, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. More, Harrison?
I feel, Harrison Bowing, I feel like it's just going to be like, do it anyway. I think one of the struggles I have when I first wake up, especially when I have to, you know, get to work early and stuff, I'm half asleep, 90% of my meditations is just do it anyway. It feels a little useless to do it when I'm sort of half conscious, but.
So I can respond to that as something that I did. It may be helpful to you, may not, but many years ago, what I would do when I was going through a time when it was felt pretty hopeless for me, and this is before my teacher even passed away and before I met Coben, but I'd only met my first teacher, and he had a lot of students, so he wasn't particularly available. Not that I could have hammered on his door, I suppose I could have. But I would just, before I even opened my eyes, I would repeat the four reminders. Are you familiar with those?
No.
Four reminders are written down. You can read them. I could recite them, but you should just read them.
Okay.
And before you even open your eyes, recite those four reminders slowly. We'll start out by reading them or memorize them. And those that can be helpful because before you even get started in your situation, you being a resident, I'm sure you have a lot of responsibility and a lot of work. Is it in the hospital for your resident?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of work. So you can start out by just emphasizing that part of your life before reminders. Can anyone here recite all those? Come on, you guys. Can you recite them? Go ahead.
Welcome.
Loud.
First, contemplate the preciousness of being free and well favored. Difficult to gain, easy to lose. Now I must do something meaningful. Second, the world and its inhabitants are impermanent. No, I forgot where.
I forgot. That's okay.
Second, the world and its inhabitants are impermanent. I lost it.
Okay, you got the idea. Anybody else want to give it a whirl? First, contemplate the preciousness of being free and well-favored, difficult to gain, easy to lose, now I must do something meaningful. Second, the world and its inhabitants are impermanent. In particular, life of beings are like a bubble. Death comes without warning. This body will be a corpse. It's not negative. It's not nihilism. Third, because I create karma, correct? I must abandon harmful deeds. But
and always devote my time to virtuous actions.
Thinking this every day, I'll examine myself. Fourth, the homes, friends, wealth, go ahead, and comfort of samsara.
Our constant torment to the three.
Comment, three sufferings. Anybody else want to finish?
Just like the hatchet man.
It's like a feast before the execution release you to your death, and must cut desire and attachment to Daniel like much of a But I've said those a lot. I don't do it so much anymore because I am the hatchet man. So stick out your neck. I'll help you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Further questions in here? Yes.
Divine, you said to Harrison, trust your body. What do you mean by trust your body?
So the mind situation is alternating and rotating. It goes this way. It doesn't know about past and future. I mean, fundamentally, the consciousness doesn't, but it's invented. And we use the body. This, I'm here, and I was over there. So past, and I'm going to jump out that window, future. So then we create that using this realistic seeming illusion, which is we believe we're this body and you're not. It doesn't mean you suddenly feel like you're floating around like a piece of lint. No, you could even feel more heavy. It is so intensely, vividly real in emptiness. I don't know if it's there. Not something you believe. You know it. You don't believe anything. You don't disbelieve anything. You don't ignore anything. So the body has a stability in the illusion of past and future. So use that. We know that's not real. It's always right now. And even that suspect. Why do you go back 20 minutes? Can you remember what happened? But we think we remember what happened because you can't remember what you forgot. You follow me? Follow me? You can't remember what you forgot. Because if you could remember what you forgot, you won't have forgotten it. And if you can remember what you forgot, you'll know that memory. What are you smiling at?
It's so convoluted.
It's what? Convoluted is an understatement. It is incredibly enveloping itself in illusion. And that is why it's so magnetic. Well, trust your body. Get up. Start saying this. Body, speech, and mind. Mind is all over the place. But that's what you work with when you practice Shikantaza. The rest of the time, it's your body. Be aware. Don't forget gravity. And also, don't clamp down on an awareness of gravity or clamp down on any one of the sense fields. Just flash on it. There's just gravity. Thoughts arise and go away. More about the trust area relative to the body. If you have it, do you have more?
So when an emotion arises, do we trust the emotion?
I'm doing anything with it, just receive it. If it shows up, it's your life. Don't miss it. But anything that shows up in your mind stream is yours. Be responsible for everything that happens. And also know at the same time, you're not to blame for anything. You have never caused anything. You're not that important. You're not that powerful. Just receive. Whatever shows up, no matter how smelly, no matter how fragrant, don't look at those. But don't ignore them. And just notice that they're not separate from each other. One is not so good, and one is quite nice. Pain and pleasure have become ornaments, which it is pleasant to wear. That's an insight that of non-duality is bliss. Pleasant to wear, but you have to see it. Don't believe anything I say. Find it for yourself.
Divine, when you say trust the body and receive what, like emotions, for example, are you saying to trust whatever shows up in the body or outside the body?
Anything that shows up has its own, carries its own identity card. It just, if it shows up, it's supposed to be there. That doesn't mean that there aren't causes and conditions behind that that you maybe can't see that are, that have some kind of causation in there. You follow what I'm, you're an acupuncturist. You follow what I'm saying a little bit?
What part, Sukrin?
That part. That part. Do you say anything about that at all?
Sukrin, bowing, what, say anything about what?
Giving the body the benefit of the doubt, but not particularly believing the thought patterns. So in other words, it's a way of, if you're starting to feel something in your body, if you're sitting on a cushion and your knees hurt, you should get up. Not use your mind to try to make yourself be disciplined. This is just, I have to say it again, baloney. Yes, it's untrue. It's untrue. It's about the macho part of the mind wanting to control and be in some kind of a stone Buddha. That's what I'm talking about. Can you say something about that? Go ahead.
Sukrin and bowing, is there an intelligence that the body could lead, that could lead awareness?
Bowing? There is. The body is awareness. It's just awareness. Body doesn't think in the sense that the, that part of consciousness that we point up here, but it really isn't here. That's just a processing device.
So, Corinne, bowing, can the body mislead or lie? Bowing?
It can, if there's no mind training. Then it can get very confused. But if there's mind training, then the body becomes more and more aware. I'm using Kung Fu Rinpoche's phrase here, first thought, best thought, just whatever you feel, pay attention to that. You don't have to obey it. It's just because some part of your body hurts or something, it doesn't mean you have to go and take a nap or something, but you can consider that. Whereas an old-fashioned way of looking at it is everybody has to hold still for 40 minutes, according to somebody in front who is the authority who strikes the bell. We don't need to do that. You notice in here, people feel uncomfortable or they need to go for a walk, they get up and go. If they don't want to come back for a week, they can do that. They might want to communicate about that a little bit just so we can continue to be a community. This is not the military. More? Can you say more about it?
So, Corinne, bowing. It's said that the body is the servant of the mind.
Yeah.
What is the body with an untrained mind?
Well, if I follow up on the statement you just made, I have to first say I don't agree with that statement. So I don't think the body and the mind are two different things, but there can be the illusion of what you just said. But that's still illusion. When body and mind are not synchronized, then you have craziness. Then you have someone operating out of fear or out of hope for something better, fear of something worse. But when the body and mind are synchronized, you will not know what you're doing anymore because you're just here. And you function out of just this reality, which is what? An illusion. But it's temporary. Temporarily, relative truth functions. So you'll know what to do next because your body and mind are no longer out of sync. You're not thinking one thing and doing something else like you would go to the grocery store and daydream about what you're going to do tomorrow at the beach. At the same time driving to the store, you actually drive to the store or go to the beach. I feel like there's something else you were asking about.
So Gurren Bowing, you say we act out of. Does the body act out of the mind? Bowing?
As long as there's a disturbance, then there's that separation of something acting out of something else. We think something and then our body starts to go that direction. So
Gurren Bowing, could we not speak and just listen to body and mind, and that be a practice?
Of course. Of course, yeah. You could call that chicken powder. Just precisely this. No matter what it is, it's not about outcomes. There are no outcomes. That's an illusion. Nothing actually occurs. It's an illusion. So what you're looking for is right here. It's available to you. You can do it. You will do it. Yes.
When you're bowing, is it an illusion because there is no past or future?
Yes, the actual reality is consciousness, to use a relative word, consciousness. But this whole situation is an illusion. But this is still part of consciousness, an aspect of consciousness, the embodiment of consciousness in a relative form that is in a particular realm of starting and ending. Birth and death, birth and death, birth and death. But the consciousness doesn't do anything. Some aspect of consciousness arises in consciousness. They're not separate from each other. Consciousness and that which arises in it are not two different things, but they just look like it. Just like the body and the mind are not two different things, but they look like it. And this body is arising in your consciousness, not your consciousness is arising in your body. So that would work too, especially if you're playing Scrabble. That was something. Let me just see if Harrison is finished with his orange soda. Do you have another one, Harrison, or more of the same? Okay. Jishin, I saw your hands up. And then I'll go to you, Hung, and then I'll come back to you. If I don't, you remind me.
Jishin Bowing. I'm quite grateful for you talking about trusting the body and mind, because I'm hearing quite often someone telling me, trust your body. And I realized that I never truly contemplated it. So thank you for introducing it on a different level. I'm just, when I'm listening to you and other people, I'm just wondering if there is something to say about the fact that after all of those years of having crazy mind operating in this body, that this body is still here to be open and give home to that craziness of our mind. And I'm wondering whether the trust is perhaps in that fact that despite of what is coming, the body is still always ready to open and ready to take it in with all of the consequences. Anyway, I don't have, I mean, my question is whether perhaps it's one way of looking at trusting the mind, trusting the body, as the basis for working with the mind, crazy mind, Bowing.
Okay.
Yuhun Bowing, I think the answer you gave to maybe to Harrison question. You mentioned that the hopeless. I'm wondering, what's your hopeless like? What was your hopeless like on this path?
I'm not sure I'm tracking. Did I say something about hopeless? H-O-P-E-L-E-S-S? Or are you talking about?
Yes, hopeless.
I don't know. Harrison, did you remember me saying something like that? You're the one with the memory, not me.
Harrison Bowing, I wouldn't go that far. I think you were talking about you were experiencing hopelessness, and which is why you used the four reminders when I was talking about my.
Yeah, I would go along with that. I don't, if I did use that word, then that's probably the way. I just was at my wit's end. I couldn't see my teacher. He was too busy. I was also frightened to go see him because he might point out something I wasn't ready to see, which is that I'm full of myself and I'm deceiving myself 24/7. I didn't want to see that. I knew it, but I didn't want him doing that. So I avoided him. I could have gone and I said, as I perhaps said, hammered on his door. But instead, what I did was, as soon as I knew that I was awake, if my eyes were closed, I opened, then I would close them and I would recite the four reminders a few times and do that very fast, which I got so I could do it very fast. And then I would slow down and do it just and contemplate each word of that. And it never felt like it was helping me. Just FYI. It's just work. It's just something to do. I didn't feel like it helped me at all. Why did I do it? I've told you 100 times why I did it, because of my teacher. You have a question?
Well, you're bowing. Just going back to what Onda brought up and trusting the body. And also, I think here's. So you say that when we're sitting here meditating, and if we need to get up, we get up.
Yes.
But for me, the thinking process comes in, and then I begin to weigh back and forth. Should I get up? Should I not? Do I really need to get up? So where is the trust in the body?
The first one. You're sitting there, and if you... There's going to be a first one. I need to get up. That's the one. It's not an impulse. That's the body mind not being separate. If you leave that and go to, well, I don't really, what will people think if I get up? I've only been sitting here for 10 minutes. Those kind of things. That's the teeter-totter or seesaw, the mind this way and this way, and this way, and this way. Looking for proof or looking for satisfaction. You will have no proof. You have to be responsible for what you do. If you feel like getting up, get up. If you feel like getting up and then you don't feel like getting up, well, maybe you should sit there for a while. So you're not going to find a correct modality for this. It has to be done with the awareness, and the awareness is full of all kinds of lies, all kinds of self-deception. As the Vajra Regent Ursula Sensen once said, I have to paraphrase, I can't quote him exactly, the samsara, or this wheel of life and death, up and down, back and forth, meditating, not meditating, being born, dying, is that samsara, that circularity is notorious. This is his way of saying it, is for being without end. It's a circle. So if you get on that, this can happen if you want. Some years it can go on. This consciousness that is shows up temporarily as a particular person, which it is not, but shows up that way because of the chemistry of fingernails and hands waving and particular skin color and your mother and your father and the neighborhood you're in and all the conditioning you got from the time you showed up. It's all relatively true, but ultimately untrue, and it will fool you unless you have a path, unless you have a true spiritual path which leads to the truth. Of the ultimate nature of everything. All the images, all the Buddhas, all the Bodhisattvas of the 10 directions and the 3 times collapse and fall away as you see what this is. And there's no one seeing it and there's nothing seen. If you're interested, keep going. If you're not, do something else. And I'm not kidding you. Well, maybe a little bit. I think if you're here, I think you should stay here. You have a question? Yes.
When you're bowing, I think you just said a few minutes ago that awareness is full of lies.
Well, it can be your thought patterns. That's why I'm saying you're sitting on the cushion and the body says, get up and get up. And it comes through the mind stream. It's going to be getting up. It's not really an impulse. If you've been meditating for what you have for years and years and years, you spend a lot of time on the cushion, you'll know when to get up. If you're going back and you're having arguments with yourself about it, then maybe you should sit some more. Maybe you should stay there. But I don't think so. You should get up. It's very simple, straightforward. And rather than follow it up with judgments about yourself, about not being a good meditator or not, this is all just self-centered stories that we tell ourselves to try to make sure that ego gets enough relative oxygen to keep pumping and keep being somebody. There isn't anyone there. There's no one there. It's an illusion. Don't believe it? Consider it. Naveed.
When you say find out where the thoughts arise, do you mean the timing of when the thoughts arise or the space in which the thoughts arise? Bowing.
All of that. All of that. It's the, again, I'll say it this way. It's the intention to see that. You may not succeed, but we're not concerned with that. It's just like looking for your car keys in the wrong place. Just continue to look at it. Continue to look. It's not car keys, of course, but it's something you may never find, but you need to look at it because the actual finding may show completely different than your preconception of what you think you lost. Michael, you have a question?
Michael Bowing.
Yes, sir.
When you say find out what this is, what are you referring to by this?
Find out what everything, your life, your environment, your living room, the world, the so-called this that is subjective and the this that is objective, to find out what all of this is. Find out what it is yourself. You see it yourself. Is that helpful?
Yes. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Bowing.
You're welcome. Bowing to you. Yes.
So, Karen Bowing, can we put others before ourselves in a way that's a misunderstanding? Bowing.
Yes, if you think you're doing that, that can be the filler. You think, especially if someone who you're close to and you're having a disagreement, and they say, or you say to them, either way, say, I'm always putting you before, putting you first. Yeah, probably not. It's just a filler. Because to actually put somebody before you before yourself, you probably won't say much because you'll be receiving, you'll be putting them first, no matter what they say, no matter how much they're lying to you or supporting or hiding out from their own fear by filling you full of whatever kind of commentary. Just receive it. That's how you do it. Just listen. If you're a Dharma teacher, it might function differently. You might put, if you're a true Dharma teacher, you will put everyone before yourself, but that doesn't mean that you won't respond when you see the confusion somebody's bringing to you. If they've given you permission to teach them, you may come right back at them and it may appear like you're putting yourself first. But you're looking at someone and you'll know it. You won't need a pat on the back saying, someone, you just graduated, you are now a Dharma teacher. You're a Dharma teacher, you won't be able to help but teach if there are students. If there are no students, you won't go out and market yourself. You'll continue to paint houses or be an acupuncturist. Did I get close to what you're looking for? If there's any credentializing of look how much, like if you told somebody, I've been doing countless hours I've spent to Maitri Bhavana for you. You can pretty much believe they're bullshit. And themselves at the same time. There's no way you can get a credential for this. It will feel more like a disappointment or distress to put others before yourself because the ego is still hungry. And if it hasn't been seen through, it'll still be thirsty and feel like you're not giving yourself a fair shake, possibly. difficult more.
So, Gurin, bowing in the midst of putting people before yourself, can resentment arise and still be giving, bowing?
It can be. There may be a lot of tailwind to that resentment. Just like, how long has this been last? Anything. But yes, there can be some resentment. But just receive that. Don't necessarily lock and load and get rid of the resentment by actually pushing that onto somebody and saying, so resentful of you, or whatever any of other Sunday papers are showing up there. Just receive the resentment, but have a willingness, just be genuine. Be the crap that you're trying to get rid of. You don't need to get rid of resentment. There isn't anybody who's resentful. That's a creation of the ego mind that wants to have some kind of longevity as a person who is going somewhere, who can win or lose, succeed or fail, live or die, attain enlightenment or remain in delusion. Polarity, polarity, circularity, circularity. It's a straight shot right into the darkness. See the truth yourself. It might be pitch black for a long time. That's why we have the three jewels. Give us something to do while we're headed that direction. Well, the resentment shows up. Don't do anything but we'll get rid of it. Don't reify it. Don't project it onto anyone. Don't. Sounds like a donut shop.
Susan bowing.
Susan, go ahead.
Sokazan, you just talked about being genuine, but if we don't know who we are, how can we be genuine? What are you talking about?
That's the only way you can do it. Thank you for bowing. That's the only way you can do it. You don't know who you are as an individual. That's gone. Now, that doesn't mean that illusion may not show up and scold you occasionally or pull on your ears or something, that it's an illusion, but you see that it's unreal. There's no way you can know who you are as an individual, as a person. It's better than that. It's worse than that. It's better because you're liberated. Consciousness is liberated from the chains of believing in a self, believing in another. More about it if you have.
Thank you, Susan Bowing. So if we know we're not, if we're frauds because we aren't genuine, what makes it so difficult to drop the act, bowing?
I'm not asking you to drop an act. Don't drop any acts. Because if you drop acts, then you think there's something you can control. You cannot control this. This happens because of consciousness, not because of how many hours you meditated. Or how many of changing yourself into a different person. Other people teach this differently. I teach it. The way I teach it is pretty straightforward and may not feel all that helpful. It takes a lot of repetition. Return to the confusion that you can only really see clearly on the wall. Sit down, hold still, watch the movement of the mind stream without grasping, rejecting, or shutting down. And you might spend a lot of time grasping, rejecting, and shutting down before that starts to back away, or its energy just starts to, because you're not validating it. You're doing it out of a dependent origination, out of habit. It just wears out after a while. It takes quite a while. So it's not about becoming a person who can drop it, or a person who is no longer a fraud because they're suddenly honest with themselves. Being honest with yourself, that's psychological talk. It may work in therapy. It may work in psychoanalysis or something like that. And it is not incorrect. It's very, very accurate, but you have to be working with someone who is working with it in that way. If you're working with a Dharma teacher and it's a true teacher of the Buddha's Dharma, then the dynamics that happen there are going to be very simple. Study the Dharma, study the concepts, study with the community, the Sangha, so you don't have internecine struggles between the right understanding of what Bodhidharma said, or the right understanding of what a Dogen or Vasubandhu, or for that matter, Trungpa anyone else there, but so that you have a basic understanding of it, that might be differentiation there a little bit, but not a lot. More? Susan, more?
Thank you, Susan Bowing. So maybe another way of asking this, if we can't see through our own cover-ups, how can we see through anything else, Bowing?
You'll see it eventually. It's a matter of looking at it without calculating or figuring things out. That's a hard thing for most people who've spent their whole life figuring things out to see through. Figuring out is not going to work. It just goes in circles because you have a why and a because, a why and a because. But the Buddha gave you the basic one that you need to work with. Why is there suffering? Because you want something else. That's the because. And so you need to look at that basic teaching and watch the way the mind reaches and rejects and shuts down, and observe that over a period of time so that the consciousness itself starts to function without those three poisons. And if it does function with the three poisons, they've been, you could say, transformed into wisdom. In other words, they only operate that way in order to help others see their true nature. Sometimes called crazy wisdom, because it doesn't make any sense why the teacher is acting this way or acting that way. Can't figure it out. Yuhong.
Yuhong Baoying. I still have the question about the hopelessness you were talking about. Sorry. So when you talk about the hopelessness, I felt a loss of a faith. So my question is, for you to felt that deep, the hopelessness to be able to see this just return, as your student, you know, on this path, for me now, just I haven't got that step to feel that hopelessness to be able to continue or wake up one day, hopefully, bowing.
So everyone is going to operate differently and have a different, if I use the word hopelessness, it was just being sad about not being able to understand what was it completely in such a way that I would stop suffering or stop having such difficulty in my relationships and so on. So it's just kind of at the end of the rope, but I just kept returning to the cushion, returning to meditation, returning to the teachings, returning to the Sangha, returning to the community of people that I was studying this together with back in the 70s and 80s. And so it's just a matter of returning. I'm not sure if I'm getting to responding to your question in a way that's helpful to you, but I'm saying just continue to return. Just, and don't get rid of, if you have a feeling of hopelessness, or if you don't, or a feeling of any kind of negative feeling. Don't do anything with it other than just feel it, and then continue to return to the practice, return to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, and return to the awareness training that you've been taught how to do.
Thank you. That's very helpful because I'm listening something in Mandarin Chinese now, just as a combination, not as a combination, just help me to understand in my native language to see this.
Well, I have a recommendation for you. You probably should pick up Red Pine's book on Bodhidharma. Do you have that? That's a bilingual.
I do.
Yeah, that's a very good, his translation into Red Pine's translation in English is amazing, and that's something we've been studying for a while with Hualing. So I would highly recommend that. But I'm not saying that. Can you tell me what it is you're studying in Mandarin?
Can I ask the question first, and I will tell you yes. My difficulty when you ask that's a great book, yes. But I think my difficulty for now is to hear. To hear and understand teaching brings me more frustration to feel that I did not suffer enough, or I did not see the suffering deeply enough. And then somehow got me to the story of that, oh, I don't know, maybe I just cannot see this. But for you, just to simply return without really have too many layers, just come back, I think it's really just cut through, at least for my own frustration at this stage, and then be back to return.
Well, it's helped me a lot. Just return. Just return. Just never give up on it. Return, even though it's sort of like you're returning to failure or to disappointment or to darkness or to no reference point. Do it anyway. Just do it anyway, because you're actually, this is a spiritual path of seeing the truth, not a mundane path of accomplishing things. I'm not saying that there aren't accomplishments. There's all kinds of things scattered all over the place in the teachings from the 10 bhumis, the 11 bhumis, and the paramitas are all laid out that way to some extent. And so I'm not against that. I just don't promote that too much. What I do promote is sit still a lot and watch the confusion come and go and come and go. And that which is observing that is not doing anything other than observing.
Thank you, Bowing.
Thank you. One last question and then we'll close.
Shani Bowing?
Go ahead.
Shani. Why is it important to return to our suffering, Bowing?
Well, simply put, if you can find a way to avoid the suffering and not return to it, and just create some kind of a temporary activity, like it could be any number of things. You could be a musician and just constantly play music all the time. Is that wrong? Of course not. Of course not. It's great to play music. But when that is being used to cover up other aspects of the mind stream, because it's just easier to do that. What I'm saying is eventually you'll have to look at what you've been covering up. Maybe not in this lifetime. And I'm not promoting belief in any damn thing, and especially future lives. I don't have to believe in anything. So do you follow me, or am I missing what you're looking for?
I think so. Could it be said that our suffering is the root of our mind, and we're trying to get to the root of that, Bowing?
Yes, the root of the relative structure there is grasping, rejecting, and shutting down. And the first one is ignoring. The idea is talked about in the 12 links on the chain of existence. The first one is maripa or avidya or ignorance. Before the ignorance, before the maripa, there was just an open dimension where there was no specificity anywhere, just openness, just consciousness only. And that, through some whatever happened, one of the images that I kind of I don't know whether I thought it up or I read it somewhere, but it works pretty good. I hope I thought it up, but I don't know that. There's two basic dualities. A hot and cold came along, and when you have warm and cold, and that's just a basic foundation. There's planets and there's stars, so that you can see there's some kind of basic energy of heat as opposed to lack of heat. Shows up, different ways of looking at it. And that creates circularity. And when that circles happens just in an open plain, you could call it a desert. Maybe there's a lot of oak leaves in the desert. And then those oak leaves are vasanas or samskaras or aspects of consciousness that have congealed into objects or concepts. And they start spinning around and creates the illusion. You ever seen a dust devil? It looks like a little miniature tornado going around, and it looks just like a person walking, even if they do have a point for a 1 foot, but they move along. It's very, very even charming to look at, unless it's really big. You call it a tornado, then it's not so charming. But that creates the illusion of otherness. That's a good example of hot and cold. The basic polarity, one of the basic polarities, comes together with wind and creates this air and starts to stir things up. And so the fundamental situation is nothing's happening. And then along comes this apparent causation, which creates ignoring the open space by filling it with this little dust devil or cyclone, fills it up as something's there. A few minutes ago, there wasn't anything. And now there's something there. Takes a while for it to actually develop eyes, nose, tongue, body, mind, feet, toes, And what are those other things? Fingers. Takes a while for that to happen. It takes millions of years for that basic situation. And that's happening everywhere, all over the so-called universe. Well, all we're doing is backtracking. Very good. Thank you so much.